program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Audio Journal's Children's Hour. The selections for this hour are designed for school-age listeners. We will read books, poems, and other children's print material. This program is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is A. Michelle, and I am very excited to be with you today. Did you know May is Mystery Month? So, in honor of the Mystery Month of May, we're going to celebrate by reading three stories and a poem that have a mystery theme. First up, King and Kayla and the Case of the Missing Dog Treats by Dory Hillstead Butler. Then, Nate the Great and the Fishy Prize by Marjorie Wineman Sharmat. Then we have Welcome to the Wolfmoor by Donna Gephardt and Laurie Hoskins Horan. Finally, we'll end with a poem by former Provincetown resident Mary Oliver called Mysteries. Yes. Are you already a mystery fan? Have you heard of the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, or the Boxcar Children? Well, these are all examples of amateur kid sleuths, someone, often with a trusty animal sidekick, who investigates crimes or mysteries just for the fun and challenge of it, rather than for a job like a cop. Our first story is about King and Kayla. King is a dog. Kayla is his owner. Together, they team up to solve the mystery of who took the treats Kayla made for her friend's new puppy. And now, King and Kayla and the Case of the Missing Dog Treats by Dory Hillstead Butler. Chapter 1. Making Peanut Butter Treats. Hello. My name is King. I'm a dog. This is Kayla. She's my human. Kayla and I are making peanut butter treats. I love peanut butter treats. They're my favorite food.
Sorry, King,
Kayla says.
These treats aren't for you.
My tail droops.
They're for my friend Jillian,
Kayla says.
She just got a new puppy.
Kayla stirs the flour, oatmeal, and baking powder. She adds milk and eggs and peanut butter. Then she rolls out the dough. Oh, it smells so, so good. I wait for her to give me some of that dough. I wait and wait and wait. I can't wait anymore. I say, Kayla, please give me some of that dough. She looks at me.
Do you want to go outside, King?
She asks. No, I say. I want some dough.
I'll take you outside in a little bit, Kayla says.
She presses a cookie cutter into the dough. She lays the pieces of dough on a cookie sheet. Then she puts the cookie sheet in the oven. May I lick the bowl? I ask.
I know you want to lick the bowl, King,
Kayla says.
But you can't. Raw dough isn't good for dogs.
She puts the bowl in the sink. My tail droops even lower.
Ding!
Kayla takes the treats out of the oven. She sets them on a wire rack to cool.
Now we can go outside and play,
Kayla says. Chapter 2. Intruder! Kayla throws the ball.
Go fetch, King,
she says. Oh, boy, I love to fetch. It's my favorite thing,
I run, run, run after the ball. I bring the ball to Kayla. She throws it again.
Hi, Kayla. Hi, King, calls a voice from the back porch.
It's Kayla's friend, Jillian. Hi, Jillian, I call back. Jillian is not alone. This is Thor, she says.
Hello, 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 Thor says.
Thor has a lot of energy. We run, we roll in the grass. Thor nips at my ears. Please don't eat my ears, I say. But Thor is just a baby. He giggles and nips at my ears again and again and again. Sometimes it's hard to be the big dog. I need a drink of water, I tell Kayla. I also need a break from Thor. I run up the back stairs and into the house. Sniff, sniff. I smell an intruder. I don't see him, but I smell him. He stinks! I hear Kayla, Jillian, and Thor clomping up the steps. There's an intruder in the house, I tell Kayla. She and Jillian walk right past me. They go over to the treats.
King, Kayla cries out. There are three treats missing. Did you take them?
No, I say. But I don't think Kayla believes me. She looks at me like I'm a bad dog. I don't like it when Kayla thinks I'm a bad dog. Chapter 3. How to Solve a Case. I didn't take the treats, I tell Kayla. I look at Thor. He and Jillian came through the kitchen on their way to the backyard. Maybe Thor took them.
I want my treats! I want my treats!
Thor cries. He leaps at the counter, but he's too short to reach the treats. So I don't think he took them. Sniff! Sniff, I still smell that intruder. Maybe the intruder took the treats.
Sit, King,
Kayla says. I don't want to sit. Let's find the intruder, I tell Kayla. Kayla doesn't understand.
King, she says, I told you to sit.
She makes mad eyes at me. I don't like it when Kayla makes mad eyes at me. I sit. I didn't take the treats, I say again. Kayla sniffs my face. She opens my mouth and looks inside. Thor looks too.
I don't think King took the treats, Kayla says.
I wag my tail.
How do you know?
Jillian asks.
His breath doesn't smell like peanut butter, Kayla says.
Kayla is a good detective.
If he didn't take them, who did?
Jillian asks.
We'll find out,
Kayla says. She grabs a notebook and a pencil.
Let's make a list of everything we know about this case,
she says. 1. There are 3 treats missing. 2. King was in the kitchen. 3. King's breath doesn't smell like peanut butter. If I could write, I would add this to Kayla's list of things we know. There's an intruder in the house.
Now, let's make a list of what we don't know about this case, Kayla says.
1. Was anyone else in the kitchen? 2. Who else likes peanut butter treats? 3. Who else could have taken the treats? If I could write, I would add this to the list of things we don't know. Who is the intruder? Where is the intruder?
Did the intruder take the treats?
Now we need a plan,
Kayla says. I have a plan. Find the intruder. Chapter 4. Clues. Follow me, I tell Kayla, Jillian, and Thor. I put my nose to the ground. Sniff, sniff.
Are you looking for clues, King?
Kayla asks. Yes, I say. I follow the intruder's scent from the back door to the counter. Hey, what's this? I ask. It's a bit of toast. I love toast. It's my favorite food. I gobble up the toast. Then I follow the intruder's scent from the counter to the hallway. Hey, what's this? I ask. It's a bit of peanut butter treat. Oh, I love peanut butter treats. They're my favorite food. I gobble up the... Oh, no. That bit of peanut butter treat was a clue. You shouldn't eat clues. I follow the intruder's scent from the hallway to the living room. Kayla's mom, Jillian's mom, and Jillian's little brother are there. They are not intruders. Kayla tells her mom about the missing treats. Her mom says. She looks at me.
King didn't take them, Kayla says. His breath doesn't smell like peanut butter. Did you see anyone go into the kitchen? Do you know who could have taken the treats?
The moms shake their heads. Come back here, Adam, Jillian's mom says. She picks up Jillian's little brother.
Wah!
Adam cries. Maybe Adam took the treats? Hey, what's this? I ask. It's a hair. A gray hair. In fact, I count 1, 4, 2, 8, 6 gray hairs. No one here has gray hair. I follow the hairs to the couch. I peer under it. 2 yellow eyes peer back at me. Chapter 5. Case closed. Intruder! Intruder! I bark. The intruder is eating Thor's treats under our couch. I need to chase him away. I need to rescue the treats, but I don't fit under the couch. The intruder laughs at me.
What's the matter, King?
Kayla asks. She and Jillian look under the couch.
It's a cat,
Jillian says.
Where did he come from?
He must have come in when the back door was open,
Kayla says. I paw at that cat, but I can't reach him.
Ha ha!
The cat laughs at me again. I need help, and I know who can help me. Thor! He is small enough to fit under the couch. The cat lets out an angry yowl and zooms out into the living room. Thor and I chase him through the kitchen and out the back door. Kayla closes the door behind him.
You were right, Kayla, Jillian says. King didn't steal the treats. That cat did.
Bad cat, I say.
Good boy, King,
Kayla says.
You solved the case of the missing treats. You are the king of crime solving.
And you are the queen, I say. Jillian gives Thor a peanut butter treat. Kayla gets me a piece of cheese. Oh, boy, I love cheese. It's my favorite food.
The end.
Our next selection is Nate the Great and the Fishy Prize by Marjorie Wineman Sharmet. If you've tuned into this podcast before, you've already met Nate the Great. Nate wears a funny hat that makes him look like the famous fictional detective Sherlock Holmes. Nate and his trusty dog Sludge are about to enter the smartest pet contest. But when the prize disappears and the contest looks about to flop, well, Nate steps in to search for clues. In more ways than one, it's a very fishy business. I, Nate the Great, am a detective. I solve important cases. I do important things. This morning I was doing something very important. I was at the supermarket buying dog shampoo for my dog, Sludge. Today, Sludge was going to be in a contest in the park to choose the smartest pet in the neighborhood. I, Nate the Great, knew that Sludge was the smartest and the dirtiest. I wanted Sludge to be a clean winner. I bought dog shampoo and flour, eggs, butter, milk, salt, sugar, and baking powder to make pancakes. I like pancakes. I bought so many things that the grocery bag bulged open. I put the bag in the basket on the back of my new bicycle and started to ride home. I rode past Rosamond's house. Strange noises were coming from inside her house. I wondered what was happening, but I kept my eyes straight ahead to see where I was going. Besides, strange noises were the right kind of noises to come from Rosamond's house, because Rosamond is strange. When I got home, Sludge was waiting for me. "I bought you some shampoo," I said. Sludge did not think that was good news. Sludge hates baths. I put the grocery bag on the floor before I could unpack it. The telephone rang. Rosamond was calling me. She said, "I am in charge of making the prize for the smartest pet contest." "I know that," I said. I, Nate the Great, hated to think what the prize would be. "Well, I made a prize, but it disappeared," Rosamond said. "What was it?" I asked. "It was an empty tuna fish can with the word SMARTEST hand-painted on it in big gold letters," Rosamond said. "Any pet would love to have it, but now it's gone."
"You will have to make another prize," I said.
"It's too late," Rosamond said. "The contest starts in an hour. Will you look for the tuna fish can?"
"I have to get Sludge ready for the contest," I said.
"But there won't be a contest unless you find the prize," Rosamond said.
I looked at Sludge. He looked smart. There had to be a contest. "I, Nate the Great, will take your case," I said. "Sludge and I will be right over." I hung up. I said to Sludge, "We must look for a tuna fish can. There is no time to give you a bath." Sludge thought that was good news. I wrote a quick note to my mother. "Dear Mother, I am on a fast, fishy case. I will be back. Love, Nate the Great." Sludge and I rushed to Rosamond's house. There was no time to say hello. "Show me where the prize was," I said. Rosamond took me to her room. It smelled fishy, and there were things knocked over, and things upside down, and things all over the floor. It was a mess. "What happened?" I asked.
"Everyone came with their pets
to sign up for the contest, Rosamond said. Annie came with Fang. Pip came with his parrot. Finley came with his rat. Oliver came with his favorite eel. Claude came with a pig. And Esmeralda came by herself. She doesn't have any pets, so she is going to be the judge. Well, Fang ran after Claude's pig. The pig ran after my four cats. My cats ran after the rat. Pip's parrot got all excited and flew around and around. Even Oliver's eel got excited. They barked and squawked and oinked and all sorts of things, and they messed up my whole room.
Yes, I, Nate the Great, heard all the strange noises when I rode by on my bicycle. But where was the tuna fish can when all of this was going on?
I had opened the window and put the can on the sill so the gold paint could dry in the air, Rosamond said.
When did you notice that the can was gone? I asked.
Right after the stampede, Rosamond said. Everyone left, and I started to clean up the room. That's when I saw that the prize was gone. I looked all over the room for it.
I will look again, I said. It could be somewhere in this mess. It must have been knocked off the windowsill. Then, perhaps one of those pets who's supposed to be so smart pushed or pulled or dragged or kicked it.
My cats are smart, Rosamond said. They're all going to win first prize.
Rosamond's cats could win first prize for being strange. I, Nate the Great, looked around the room. Did you paint the can in this room? I asked.
No,
Rosamond said. Good. I am looking for smudges of gold paint. They might be a clue to where the can went. But if you had painted in this room, you could have left smudges.
I don't smudge, Rosamond said.
I, Nate the Great, went to the windowsill. If I could find smudges of gold paint inside the sill or outside the sill, I would know whether the can went inside or outside. But the can had not left any clues behind. Sludge was sniffing and sniffing. I asked Rosamond, "Did you wash the tuna fish can before you made it into a prize?"
"Sort of,"
Rosamond said. "Sort of?" I said. "How do you sort of wash a tuna fish can?"
"My cats licked it," Rosamond said. "They do a good job. They love tuna fish."
"But they don't use soap," I said. "That means the prize may still smell fishy. That is a clue." I turned to Sludge. "Fishy smell," I said. Sludge and I could not find the can in Rosamond's room. The can is not here. Perhaps it went out the window. Sludge and I rushed outside. We looked around. There was no tuna fish can. There were no smudges of gold paint. There was nothing but a sidewalk. We walked back and forth. Perhaps the can had been pushed or pulled or dragged or kicked up the street or down the street. But we could not find anything. We went back inside. "This is a very fishy case," I said to Rosamond. "The can was on the windowsill, so it had to be knocked inside the house or outside the house. But it isn't inside, and it isn't outside."
"Maybe someone took the can on purpose," Rosamond said.
Nate the Great did not want to tell Rosamond that no one would take her tuna fish can on purpose. That It was the dumbest prize for the smartest contest. "I will have to speak to everyone who is in this room," I said. "Perhaps someone saw what happened to the tuna fish can." Sludge and I rushed to Claude's house. Claude was there with a pig. Claude is always losing things. I was glad he had not lost the pig. Claude was brushing the pig's bristles while she ate a big pile of food. "I'm getting Anastasia ready for the smartest pet contest," Claude said. Anastasia oinked. I watched her eat. The food was disappearing fast. I was thinking. The tuna fish can had completely disappeared. Maybe it had disappeared inside something. One way to make something disappear is to eat it. I, Nate the Great, spoke up. "Pigs are supposed to eat like pigs. Would Anastasia eat a tin can?" "I don't know," Claude said. "She's not my pig. She lives on a farm, and I borrowed her for the contest. But I keep losing her. She finds her way back to me. Oh, she's smart. That's why she's going to win the contest." Anastasia oinked again. "May I open Anastasia's mouth?" I asked. "If you really want to," Claude said. I, Nate the Great, did not really want to open Anastasia's mouth. But I had a case to solve. I had a job to do. Slowly I opened her mouth. Quickly I closed her mouth. Anastasia did not eat the tuna fish can. "How do you know?" Claude asked. "Because the gold paint on the can was wet. Anastasia would have a gold mouth if she ate the can." "Tell me, did you see the can on Rosamond's windowsill?"
"I saw it and I didn't see it," Claude said.
"That is an interesting answer," I said. I, Nate the Great, say, "That is an interesting answer." "Well, I saw the can on the windowsill just before everyone started to run around," Claude said. "When it was all over, I didn't see the can anymore." "That is an old clue," I said. "I already know that the can disappeared during the animal stampede. I, Nate the Great, need a new clue, and I need it fast." Sludge and I left. I was sorry I had seen Anastasia. She made me feel very hungry. I wished I had time to go home and make pancakes with the things I had bought at the supermarket. But I hadn't even had time to unpack them. And I knew there was not enough time left to talk to everyone else who had been in Rosamond's room. Annie, Oliver, Pip, Finley, and Esmeralda were left. I decided to go to Esmeralda's house. I had two reasons. Esmeralda is smart. Esmeralda does not have a pet. Perhaps she had a chance to see something when everyone was busy with their pets. Esmeralda was sitting quietly outside on her steps. She did not have anybody to wash or brush or feed or brag about. I said, "I am looking for the tuna fish can that was on Rosamond's windowsill. Did you see it?" "Yes," Esmeralda said. "I saw it before everything went wild. Fang was standing under it." "Fang," I said, "tell me, which way was he facing?"
"He was standing with his right side next to the window," Esmeralda said. His fangs were showing, and his tail was swooshing back and forth.
I, Nate the Great, was thinking. This was a new clue, but did it mean anything? Suddenly, I knew that it was important. Sludge and I rushed to Annie's house. She was giving Fang a bath. He was sitting in the bathtub, all soapy and foamy and fangy.
"I'm getting Fang ready for the contest," Annie said. "Everyone knows he's pretty. Now they will find out he is smart."
I, Nate the Great, already knew more about Fang than I wanted to know. Annie started to scrub Fang's tail.
"Stop!"
I yelled.
"Fang may be wearing a clue."
"Fang isn't wearing anything," Annie said.
I, Nate the Great, got close to Fang. I did not want to do that, but I had to see his tail. I was glad the clue was on that end of him. I leaned over. I saw what I had hoped I would see, gold paint on Fang's tail. It was on the right side.
"Happy bath," I said to Fang.
Sludge and I rushed back to Rosamond's house. I, Nate the Great, say the tuna fish can was knocked outside.
"How do you know that?"
Rosamond asked. "Because Fang was standing with his right side next to the window," I said. "His tail was going back and forth. He got gold paint on the right side of his tail. That means his tail hit the can going outward, right out the window. Sludge and I are going to look very hard outside your house again."
"The contest is supposed to start in 15 minutes, Rosamond said.
"Then we will look very hard and very fast," I said. Sludge and I rushed outside. We looked around again. We walked up and down the sidewalk again. It was a boring sidewalk. Cracks, but no clues. Nate the Great, was stumped. This was definitely a tough, fishy case. I was not going to solve it on time. I was not going to solve it at all. Sludge and I walked home. We went into the kitchen. Sludge sniffed the grocery bag. Why was he sniffing the grocery bag? It only had dog shampoo and things for making pancakes, and Sludge does not like dog shampoo or pancakes. But I could not think about the bag. I had to think about the case. I thought about the can being knocked to the outside. I thought about it happening while everything was noisy and wild. I thought about fishy smells and things disappearing inside Anastasia's stomach and gold paint. I thought about Fang's tail. Fang had taken home some gold paint on his tail. He did not know he had taken it home. Annie did not know he had taken it home. Perhaps someone had taken the tuna fish can home but did not know it. But how? Tuna fish cans do not stick to tails. You can see a tuna fish can, unless you can't see it, unless it is hidden from sight, unless it disappears into something as big and bulgy as Anastasia's stomach. Suddenly, I, Nate the Great, knew I had solved the case. But I knew Sludge had solved it sooner. He was still sniffing my grocery bag. I looked inside the bag. Then I put my hand inside the bag and pulled out an empty tuna fish can with "Smartest" painted on it in smudged gold letters. I, Nate the Great, had taken the can, and I knew how it had happened. Fang knocked the can out of the window just as I was riding past Rosamond's house. The can fell into the open grocery bag that was in the basket on the back of my bicycle. I had taken the can home without knowing it. And now I must take the can to the contest. Sludge and I rushed to the park, where everyone was waiting for the contest to start. Rosamond was there with her four cats. Annie was there with Fang. Pip was there with his parrot. Finley was there with his rat. Oliver was there with his favorite eel. Esmeralda was there with herself. Claude and Anastasia were not there. I was not surprised. Either Claude had lost Anastasia or Anastasia had lost Claude. I held up the prize. I said, "This was in my grocery bag. It is a long story, and time is short." I handed the prize to Esmeralda, the judge. Rosamond clapped her hands. "Oh, goody green grasshoppers," she said. "Now we can have the contest." "Yes, I, Nate the Great, solved the case," I said. "But Sludge solved it first." Esmeralda said, "That was a very smart thing for Sludge to do. But every pet will have a chance to do something smart. Let's begin." I, Nate the Great, had to watch and listen while Oliver's eel swam backward. Fang did something stupid with his fangs. Rosamond's cats shed hair on command. Finley's rat found some hidden cheese, and Pip's parrot forgot her entire speech. Then Esmeralda said, "The winner is Sludge, the only pet who can solve a mystery." Sludge looked proud. I, Nate the Great, looked proud. Everyone congratulated Sludge. Esmeralda handed the prize to him. Sludge sniffed it, but he did not know what to do with it. He was now the owner of a very strange tuna fish can with smudged gold letters. Sludge and I went home with the prize. I gave him a huge bone. Sludge thought it was the best prize of all. The case was over, but I had something left to do. I unpacked the grocery bag, threw away the dog shampoo, and made some pancakes, because I, Nate the Great, deserved a prize too. And now for our final story of the day, Welcome to the Woof Moor, by Donna Gephardt and Laurie Haskins Horan. Chapter 1. Grand Opening. Rufus tugged his jacket. He fixed his bow tie. He smoothed his fur. The boss, Ms. Coco, was coming. Everything at the hotel had to be perfect, even him. Ms. Coco's nails tapped across the marble floor. Clickety-click, clickety-click.
"Good morning, ma'am," Rufus said.
"Hello, Rufus," said Ms. Coco. She looked him over from nose to tail. It took a while. He was five times her size, at least. Ms. Coco smiled. "Perfect. Phew. This is it," she said. "The grand opening of the Woof Moor Hotel. Is there a full water bowl in every room?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"A piece of kibble on every pillow?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Good boy."
Rufus wagged his tail. He liked being called a good boy.
"Now, Rufus, listen closely."
Rufus tilted his head. That was how he did his best listening.
"A VIP guest is arriving. As you know, every dog is a very important
pooch here at the Wolfmaw, but this guest is extra special.
Extra special?
Rufus made a little toot. Oops. Sometimes he did that when he felt nervous. Ms. Coco did not notice.
Please meet her limo, Rufus, and give her tip-top treatment all week.
Yes, ma'am. Tip-top treatment.
Ms. Coco clickety-clacked back to her office. Who could the special guest be? Rufus didn't have to wait long to find out. Crunch! A long white car pulled up the gravel driveway.
The VIP!
Rufus hurried outside. He ran in two quick circles to calm himself. Then he opened the back door of the shiny limo. A silky golden retriever jumped out. She wore a huge straw hat and sunglasses. Who was she? Rufus remembered his job.
"Welcome to the Wolfmaw Hotel," he said. "My name is Rufus."
"Thank you, Rufus," said the retriever.
"Her voice!" Rufus knew that voice, and he knew exactly who the dog was behind those sunglasses. Greta Garbark, the biggest movie star in the world! He wanted to let out an excited howl.
"Quiet,"
he whispered to himself.
"Yes, quiet," said Mrs. Garbark. "That is just what I need. Peace and quiet."
"Then that is what you will have," said Rufus.
Suddenly, a pack of pups burst from the bushes. They started yelling and snapping pictures.
"Greta! Greta! Over here! Smile for the cameras!"
"Oh, no!" Ms. Garbark cried. "The pup Arazzi! They have found me!"
"Hurry!" shouted Rufus. "Inside!"
Chapter 2. Peace and quiet. Rufus rushed Ms. Garbark into the hotel. He shut the doors behind them.
"You are safe," Rufus said. "They can't hound you in here."
"Just one problem," said Ms. Garbark.
She pointed her paw at some dogs in the lobby.
Dozens of dogs.
They were all checking into the hotel.
"If they know who I am, I will not have peace and quiet. I will have a ruckus, Rufus."
Rufus wanted to do a good job. He wanted to give Miss Garbark tip-top treatment. Rufus did not want a ruckus.
"Do not worry. I have an idea," he said. "A perfect idea."
Rufus called Sparkles from the Sudsy Spa on the second floor.
"Bring Miss Garbark right in," said Sparkles. "We will take good care of her."
Ms. Garbark got a sudsy bath. She got a fresh new fur style. She got a bold new color, pupster purple. Nobody at the Wolfmaw would know who she was, unless...
"What do you think?"
Ms. Garbark asked Rufus.
"Shh," he said.
"Excuse me?"
"Sorry," said Rufus. "It's your voice. If the guests hear it, they will know who you are right away."
"I see. If I want quiet, I must be quiet."
"Yes,"
said Rufus. Ms. Garbark closed her mouth. She joined the other guests, quietly. She dog-paddled in the pool. She lay in the sun. She read a magazine with her own picture on it. No one knew who she was. Rufus checked on Ms. Garbark.
"Do you have peace? Do you have quiet?"
Ms. Garbark smiled. She gave him a big pause up. Rufus went to Ms. Coco's office. He told his boss about Ms. Garbark's spa disguise.
"Great job," said Ms. Coco.
She tossed Rufus a treat. Rufus wagged his tail. He was doing a great job. The special guest was happy. Everything at the hotel was perfect. The grand opening was going off without a hitch. Chapter 3. A Hitch and an Itch. Every day, Rufus checked on Ms. Garbark. Every day, she gave him a big paws up. Every day, Ms. Coco tossed Rufus a treat. Rufus would be sad to see Ms. Garbark leave tomorrow. He liked her, and he liked treats.
Ms. Coco?
Hank, the housekeeper, knocked on Ms. Coco's door.
We have a problem.
Rufus made a little toot.
Problems made him nervous.
The guest from room 201 was scratching, said Hank.
Scratching?
Asked Miss Coco.
Scratching, said Hank.
The guest from room 410 was scratching, too. Miss Coco looked out the window. She saw three guests at the pool. Three scratching guests.
No, it can't be,
cried Miss Coco. The fur on her back stood straight up.
Fleas! We have fleas at the Woofmoor!
Rufus tooted. A big one this time.
What are we going to do?
Asked Hank the housekeeper. Ms. Coco paced back and forth. Clickety-click, clickety-click.
There is only one answer, she said. We must give every guest a flea bath. I will tell Sparkles to get ready.
Ms. Coco put her head in her paws.
This will ruin us.
Oh, the Woofmoor will be called a flea bag hotel.
Wait, said Rufus. Let me think. Maybe there's a way to keep our good name.
Think fast, Rufus, said Ms. Coco. We need to solve this problem today.
Buzz, buzz. A buzzer sounded on Ms. Coco's desk.
It's the VIP room, she said.
Ms. Garbark needs something, said Rufus. I will take care of it.
Ms. Coco groaned.
Ms. Garbark, when she finds out, we will be finished.
Rufus hurried to the elevator.
Ding!
The door opened. He stepped aside so two guests could get off.
I hope you are enjoying your stay at the Woofmoor, he said politely.
Yes, it's lovely here,
said a poodle in pearls. She scratched her head.
The food is terrific,
said a husky in a hat. He scratched his chin.
We are heading for breakfast now.
Rufus got in the elevator. He pressed 10 for the top floor.
Ding!
Rufus ran out. He tapped on Ms. Garbark's door.
It's Rufus. May I help you?
Ms. Garbark opened the door.
Hi, Rufus. Could I get...
She stopped. You look strange. What's wrong?
Nothing, said Rufus. I'm fine.
But Rufus was not fine. Something was crawling on him. Up his back. Up his shoulder. Up his neck. Ms. Garbark said,
All right, then. I just wanted...
Ouch!
Rufus felt a sharp bite on his ear.
Rufus? Then it came. The feeling. The awful, hot, itchy feeling.
Are you sure you're okay?
His ear, it was so very itchy.
Rufus couldn't take it anymore. He reached up his paw.
Scratch, scratch, scratch.
You too? Why
is everyone at the hotel scratching?" said Ms. Garbark.
What do you mean?" asked Rufus.
"Scratch, scratch, 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 scratch."
Ms. Garbark gasped. "It's fleas, isn't it?"
Oh, no. Ms. Garbark knew the Woofmore was finished, and it was all his fault.
Rufus whimpered. His tail drooped. But Ms. Garbark patted his shoulder.
"Do not worry. I have an idea," she said. "A perfect idea."
Chapter 4. A Ruckus. Rufus followed Ms. Garbark to the dining room. It was full of guests having breakfast. They were chewing and chatting. Ms. Garbark cleared her throat.
"Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?"
The guests stopped chewing. The guests stopped chatting.
Her voice. They knew that voice. "It's Greta Garbark," cried the poodle in pearls. "The world's biggest movie star."
"Only
she's purple," said the husky in a hat.
"That's right," said Ms. Garbark. "Don't you adore my new fur style? I got it right here at the Sudsy Spa." She posed with her paws on her hips.
"Ooh," said the guests.
"Aw." "You can get a new style, too. The spa has a Greta Garbark special today only. I will be there. You can get your picture taken with me."
The guests jumped up.
They wanted the Greta Garbark special.
Rufus called Sparkles at the Sudsy Spa.
"Bring them right in," she said. "We will take good care of them."
Each guest got a sudsy bath with flea be gone shampoo. Each guest got a fresh new fur style. Each guest got a bold new color. They all chose Pupster Purple. And each guest got a photo with Ms. Garbark. The dogs crowded around her, dozens of dogs.
"This is a ruckus," whispered Rufus. "I'm sorry, Ms. Garbark."
Ms. Garbark smiled.
"It's okay, Rufus."
While the pups were pampered, Hank the housekeeper sprayed all the rooms with flea be gone. Then he got his own flea bath. So did Ms. Coco and Rufus and Sparkles. Ms. Garbark, too.
"The Woofmore is now flea-free," Ms. Coco said.
"Thank you, Ms. Garbark."
"Thank you. I had a wonderful week. Lots of peace and quiet." Then Ms. Garbark sighed.
"I do not want to face the paparazzi tomorrow."
"Maybe you do not have to face them," Rufus said.
"Impossible," Ms. Garbark said. "They always sniff me out."
"Do not worry. I have an idea," said Rufus.
"Let me guess, Rufus. A perfect idea."
Rufus grinned.
"For sure."
Chapter 5. Pupster Purple. Rufus tugged his jacket. He fixed his bow tie. He smoothed his fur. Ms. Coco stood beside him.
"Thank you for staying at the Woofmore," she told Ms. Garbark.
"Please,
Come again,
added Rufus.
Oh, I will, promised Ms. Garbark. Thank you so much for this.
She pointed her paw at the guests in the lobby. Dozens of dogs, all waiting to help.
Ready, everyone?
Called Ms. Coco. Ready, everyone answered. Ms. Coco phoned the driver to bring Ms. Garbark's limo.
Crunch!
The long white car pulled up in front of the hotel. Ms. Garbark waved goodbye to Rufus and Ms. Coco. Then she walked out. But she wasn't alone. She was with all the other dogs. Dozens of dogs.
Greta! Greta Garbark!
The paparazzi burst from the bushes.
Greta! Where are you? Greta!
The paparazzi could not spot her. There were too many pups. Too many purple pups. Rufus watched out the window. He saw Ms. Garbark slip into the back of her limo. He saw her right away in peace and quiet. Rufus wagged his tail.
What a week, said Ms. Coco.
It was a bit rough, said Rufus, but we made it.
Ms. Coco gave Rufus an extra big treat.
Enjoy your day off. Next week, we will have our second special guest at the Woof Mall.
Second VIP? Oh, boy!
Rufus couldn't help it. He tooted twice.
Mysteries, Yes, by Mary Oliver. Truly, we live with mysteries too marvelous to be understood. How grass can be nourishing in the mouths of lambs. How rivers and stones are forever in allegiance with gravity while we ourselves dream of rising. How two hands touch and the bonds will never be broken. How people come from delight or the scars of damage to the comfort of a poem. Let me keep my distance always from those who think they have the answers. Let me keep company always with those who say, look, and laugh in astonishment and bow their heads. This Children's Hour program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I hope you will join us next week for Children's Hour. If you have any comments or ideas, we'd love to hear from you. I'm A. Michelle. Thank you for listening.
Did you know ADA paratransit riders in Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westboro, and West Boylston now have the option to schedule trips through the Worcester Regional Transit Authority's new online reservation system? Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to begin scheduling your trip online.